Welcome to the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast, the show for anyone wanting to be on the cutting edge of SaaS tech sales. We provide the tools you need to take advantage of the rapidly changing sales environment. We bring you the leading experts on the front lines of SaaS sales and distill down our famous masterclasses into bite-sized practical tips. Your hosts will be Ash Ali and Matt Milligan, and on this podcast, we will be transforming your ability to sell more and smash your targets.
Welcome back to another episode of the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast. We talk a lot here on the show about what it takes to lead revenue teams at high growth companies. We've had revenue leaders from some of the fastest growing SaaS businesses in history. And today's guest is another one that fits into that category. Today's guest is head of EMEA at Canva. Today's guest has an amazing career journey that he's going to share some insights and golden nuggets of wisdom with us. Today's guest is Jorge Bastard. Jorge, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Matt. Good to be here.
Awesome. Jorge, the question that I always like to begin with, I've been doing a bit of research. So I know that you've got a really interesting background, not just in terms of business career, but also sports as well. So I'd love to throw that out to you. How did you arrive into a career in go-to-market and sales and revenue? What's your journey been so far?
Yeah, absolutely. I am originally from Spain, from a little town in the north. And never in my wildest dreams did I ever think I never even saw tech and sales as a viable profession. Throughout my youth, I had a very strong career in sports. That's what I thought I was going to. I was a boxer for a good part of my youth and got as close to being a professional boxer as possible. But fate decided for me to go a different route and on to tech sales. When I was 17, I built a startup with my brother. It was an Airbnb for local venues. Again, this is years before Airbnb was around. So it was kind of a new concept. We raised a little bit of capital and we just decided to go for it. That took me to raise a little bit of capital in San Francisco and then just continue down the sales path. When our company got acquired, I decided to focus what I had enjoyed the most, which was sales. Again, had no idea that was even a profession. I just thought, if I connect great people with great products and I solve their challenges, I think they're going to find a lot of value. So I decided to work for a company called Olipic at the time. Olipic was a company founded by two Spanish founders who were figuring out sales in North America. And then once we raised a little bit of capital, with first round capital, we decided to move over to London and build the office there. Like many folks that have been in London for some time, we all came here for a couple months and decided to stay for many, many years. So it's my eighth year in London now. After Olipic got acquired, decided to move to Facebook. At Facebook, I was working with Julie and Lisai Share, which had built the workplace for Facebook product, which is the B2B internal communication tool for Facebook, and was leading the sales team out of EMEA. Moved to Singapore for a little bit to lead this APAC team there. Eventually came back to London to build the sales success team for Mero. I did for about a year and a half, and I've been a Canva for the last years. You can see it's always a little bit of a theme, which is B2B SaaS focused companies, which are starting to enter a region and are starting to grow quite rapidly.
Amazing, man. What a ride. Started off in the ring. I'm sure that you've got some amazing boxing analogies that you must use with your team to teach them.
Yeah. First of all, I always think about each quarter like a round, right? I always tell the team, like, you can have really good rounds, but you can have really bad ones. But there's always one more round where you can make up for the things that you did have wrong. What I always tell the team is focus on the very basics, right? Let's focus on, hey, you know, punching more than you get punched, right? Let's focus on making sure that the basics, that everything that we're doing, everything that we're training is done, right? So when we're presented with opportunities for success, it almost feels natural, right? I do see that as one of the aspects that most people have a challenging time in, is that once they're presented with an opportunity, it can go both ways, which is a 50-50 opportunity. Sometimes folks are not as prepared, and because they're not as prepared, sometimes it skews more towards failure than success, right? So that repeatable training and that constant flow and training rhythm is very important for reps.
Yeah, I love that. It feels like there's analogies for days in the combat sports
Absolutely.
World. One of our SDRs here at UHubs is a mixed martial artist, and we're constantly talking about adaptability in the deal or on the call, and how do you roll the punches and not get stunned by an interruption or a strong objection. It's awesome kind of taking you right through to, as you mentioned, specializing in companies that are looking to go global. And would it be fair to say, like, jumping in when they've kind of got that product market fit and and now they're trying to find that go-to-market fit. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I would say a lot of these companies, they have product market fit, especially in the case for Facebook, Miro, and Canva. They were all consumer companies that were loved and used, and they were trying to find their sales market fit for the enterprise space. And that takes a little bit of a different sense, and it takes a little bit of a different say, observation from both the leads and the ICs that are hired into the company. You want to hire builders. You want to hire people that just have really the intellectual curiosity, not only the products, the problems that they can solve to get that sales market fit. Maybe hire someone that is very used to a set way of selling, and if that method does not work, they just lock down. They're not at that right stage. So you want to hire for rep one.
That's a super interesting insight. I hear leaders talk a lot about how the evolution of the profile of a seller in your team, right? So the profile of seller you have from 1 to 10 looks quite different to the profile of seller you probably want to be hiring at that higher number 50. But the insight there is then also working in a successful consumer brand, and then trying to build the B2B offering on top of you. That there's a different element, a different angle to that, right?
Yeah. And a lot of people, they think, okay, because it's a well-known brand, it'll be easier. Generally, it does help open some doors. It does not help bring the deal to a close. Because at the end of the day, I think especially in this economy, people, they look at how are you going to make them money? How are you going to save them money? Or how does this fit into the ecosystem? Regardless of the brand or how well you're known, I think it's ultimately those three things.
I mean, the one thing, the only difference with consumer brand to a chip consumer to enterprise is that you're able to leverage a lot of that product-led growth motion that is helpful. You see a lot of the below-the-line or user buyers that they're already using the product, which will help you champion the cause in order to go above the line to sea levels.
Super cool. And I mean, we'd love to do a mini segue and just talk for a moment about PLG, because I think it's a fascinating time for PLG, obviously, as being like so in vogue in the B2B world. And you know, you've worked at multiple brands there who have been built upon a PLG motion, and then you've come in and built sales on top. Well, I guess first question, how are you viewing product-led growth in today's climate? You know, we're recording this in October 2023. What do you think's changed, if anything, in 2023 when it comes to product-led?
Well, from a macro standpoint, there's no free money, right? So companies they're less likely to take risks. Ultimately, when a CIO decides on a product, they want to make sure that it's being used. The exercise that they probably go through is how the products that I bought a couple of years ago, when I could spend as much money as possible, are those products relevant? Are they being used? Second, the ones that I did not buy, but my colleagues are using, so here comes the PLG motion, should we actually buy them officially as a company? And should we get them across the board? And three, is that second tier of products can replace a lot of the products that I bought. So I can say PLG does a wonderful job at saying, hey, you know what? We didn't choose this product, but people are using it. The hardest thing for a CIO is I bought a product and I have to convince people to use it. So that step is done, right? So people have already taken the ability to buy that product and choose a product into their own hands. However, probably the challenge for PLG is that works maybe for 10 or 15% of the company that have decided to jump and buy the product by themselves, right? So kind of like that dark IT challenge that the CIOs have. How viable is it for the other 85% of the company that hasn't bought the product? And how, as sales executives, can we share the big picture of our product for the other 85%? And that's where the real job comes in, which is, yes, let's definitely grow bottoms up, but let's make sure that we take a sandwich approach with the C-level, so they understand the vision, so they understand where we're coming from, so we're able to get the company just across the board. Some companies do that incredibly, you know, and some companies are stuck at the bottoms up area, which they're able to convince the user buyers, but it becomes a little bit of a harder sell.
Super interesting. It almost feels like in many ways, PLG is kind of like maturing, and now there's like a new set of challenges facing teams like yourself. What's been the knock-on impact in terms of, think about your team today at Canva? Like, what are some things that you're having to work maybe harder on enabling your team?
So a few things here. Because of PLG, the role of junior account managers in SDR becomes a little bit more important. And also because of the rise of AI, it does become a little bit more. So the market is saturated with products that people are taking to their own app. I mentioned kind of that bottoms-up approach. But the market is also saturated with AI that does messaging very effectively. That's where enablement of SDRs and junior account managers becomes really important. We're seeing that SDRs are starting to manage trials. They're starting to manage discovery a little bit more in depth. They're setting up trials, doing more demos. They're a little bit further advanced in the opportunity lifecycle. And I think that's a shift that's going to happen across any sales function because of both PLG and because of AI. Second thing that's changed the mentality. We talked a little bit about the mentality of the builder in your first hires. Well, the mentality of the builders and even at the sales phase is very important, because if you're hearing about an idea or a tactic or a strategy that's just a little bit different. And you think, okay, well, that's new, but it's really hard to implement. Not sure if it'll scale. It means that other companies are thinking the same thing and they're not doing it. And because they're not doing that one tactic, they're probably doing the others that are easy and scalable, saturating the market even further, right? So those opportunities that seem really hard, if no one else is doing it, probably should be doing it. And you're going to break through the noise. And you're going to be one of the 367 billion emails that are being sent every day, but it's going to be a little bit different. So what I always tell my reps is keep that in mind. Just the amount of emails that people get in their inboxes, the sales conversations that they have, it's a very noisy market. And you have to figure out what is that one tactic, strategy that seems very hard that nobody wants to do because it's hard, and go do that one. That's what's going to stand them.
I love that. It's super interesting. It reminds me of one of our advisors here at UHubs talks to me a lot about like identifying what the difficult problems are to solve. But most people just kind of go path of least resistance, right? So like you say, if everyone's just sending more and more spam through sales engagement tools, then we just keep doing that. But focusing on the difficult tactics that might be less scalable and finding ways to incorporate those.
Yeah. Once you start doing the non-scalable tactics and they start working, even if they're not scalable, there's a phase two to that, which is, okay, well, how do I make that scalable, right? But you have to prove that it works, even in a non-scalable way. And then you start to think about how can I make that scalable and how can we get the team across? And it's hard because, you know, 99% of them are not going to work. But if you get really good at doing the hard stuff and doing the really, say, counterintuitive things, then you're going to stand out.
Super interesting. I don't want to steal your industry golden secrets. Maybe you could share one that worked two quarters ago, but maybe isn't working as well now. But help us understand, like, what's an example of like one of those things that's maybe less scalable, that's difficult, but has worked?
Yeah. Anywhere where you're doing outreach, you know, there's a lot of talk about AI, hyper-personalization at scale. I think if any SDR or any junior account executive who is not personalizing as much as possible to what the company is expecting, they're falling behind. They're not doing themselves a service. So immediately, what you want to do to really understand the challenges of the companies that you're reaching out to, download the investor relation papers of any public company and start asking that paper question and have a conversation with that paper to see, you know, what is the marrow, what is the core of the company's challenges, and apply that to every one of your outreach. And again, that's just like the first layer of the cake, because if you're not doing bad and you're still sending kind of these spammy generic emails, you're not cutting through the noise.
Yeah, I love that. And are you suggesting using like ChatGPT to have that dialogue back and forth? Yeah.
Just upload the paper and just start having a conversation with the paper. Like, hey, this is the company I'm targeting. This is what my company does. Where do you think my company will provide value in relation to the challenges that this company has presented last quarter? You'll be mind blown by the conversations you can have with AI.
Brilliant use case. Oh, man, it's so good for things like that, isn't it? So you're not starting from a blank canvas. I had one recently. I mean, I was speaking to my team the other day and they were like, well, we were having this debate around you receive so much outbound that it's almost impossible to remember. I had even one really good piece of outreach. I couldn't even remember the company or the name, and then I kind of managed to find it. But yeah, he basically pulled all personal investor names from PitchBook and like named them all in the outreach email. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Exactly. Yeah. And ultimately, when you have that, when you do have that first conversation, you have to be a lot more prepared, right? Even before you have the discovery call, you should have a very strong hypothesis on what the company is going through, just based on the challenges that they presented publicly.
Yeah, it makes sense. That awareness and understanding. And I guess a lot of this, it sounds, goes back to the point you made earlier, which is you can only personalize something once you truly understand the challenges of the account that you're going after. We've touched there on the AI topic, Jorge, and I'd be amiss if we didn't dive a little bit deeper there. So you've already given us some great golden nuggets. I love that framework of identifying difficult tactics and then phase two, identify what works and figure out how to make it scalable. AI is presenting us with an opportunity to do things at scale that were previously only in our imagination. Yep. I know that AI is a very key part of the strategy at Canva. I mean, I'd love to have a brief conversation there around what your viewpoints are, both in terms of what you're seeing at Canva and how you at Canva you're leveraging the AI opportunity. And then also for your team, like what are some of the ways that you're seeing AI disrupt the way that your team operates?
So AI for design, it's incredibly useful for folks that are starting to design, but they don't have a really strong design background. It's making them be very design conscious. It's really arming them with the right tool. For folks that are already designers, it's saving a lot of time on the very manual tasks that they have. That from a Canva standpoint. If you apply that to sales, you're gonna do pretty much the same thing. I'll give you a very concrete example. I think no rep loves to input data in their CRM. Once you have the calls or you have that first meeting, you know, the follow-up email, what does it look like? Putting the information in the CRM. There's so many tasks that are done outside of pure selling that reps have to do. I'm a firm believer that all that is going to disappear within the next year. So I was reading a stat earlier that 60% of the tasks that sales reps do are non-related sales tasks. So that is inputting information, input
putting their forecast, sending X, Y, or Z email. So they're non-sales related tasks. It's all going to disappear with AI. I have a very strong belief that AI will interpret the call, put the notes in for you in a CRM. The CRM will be automated in a way that it will move the opportunity through the funnel based on the inputs that are objective, non-human inputted, which a lot of times humans, we do get it wrong. And that will tell us sales leaders whether the opportunity is moving in the right direction or what's wrong with the opportunity. So I think the most immediate thing that we're seeing is a lot of things that at Clarity or Call Outreach are doing, call intelligence, forecasting intelligence. Another concrete example, you have a call, it will summarize the call and tell you what are the immediate next steps. So when I just go into my sales intelligence platform, I can see how many calls were had that day, what are the next steps, and if the deal is advancing. What that's going to look like in the next 2 years, I mean, it's going to be dynamic. So I think it's actually very positive. And as I mentioned, for that 60% of non-sales tasks, those are going to get taken away. So that 40% of sales related tasks, those are going to become very, very important. So having salespeople that know how to sell, that have those interpersonal skills, that have that intuition to really deep dive into the company or connect the dots with the companies, it's going to be even more important. We're essentially getting the sales profession back to just having really, really skilled people that understand how to solve problems for our customers.
Yeah, super interesting. I think there's a lot to like about that future that you just described. And I can't help thinking, you know, you talked about it there, some of the things around focusing on, you know, reps with high intuition can actually help problem solve with customers, have strong interpersonal skills. I can't help but wonder, what is the way in which we enable and coach and develop our teams? How do you see that changing as with the rise of AI? Is it just about doubling down on those skills that you spoke about?
Yeah, so it is going to be about doubling down. And when I think about enablement as well, I think about it in three areas, which is first, like the first area is you're new to the company. Like what's the time from you joining the company to the first sale? That is very reduced once you have a sales enablement platform that really supports the rep to that. Then the time, and there's a second area, which is the repeatable sales that your team should be doing. So what's the time from the first conversation to a contract sign? And how can you reduce that time where there are knowledge gaps? And then there's a percentage of success. You know, once you are in that sales cycle, what's your percentage of success? And is that influenced by the knowledge that a rep you provided? So enablement becomes more important. It's also very important to have somebody that is actively diagnosing, you know, how to save time on those three areas. And that person that diagnoses is able to find the solution to those through either knowledge gaps, reduction in certain aspects of that. To answer your question directly, I think enablement is going to really support those three areas. And it becomes even more important with the economic climate that we discussed earlier, with very, very, very harsh conditions where each deal is evaluated. Is this going to make or break our client's business?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess it helps for you folks at Canva having a great enablement function. And Clayton, I've been fortunate enough to spend some time with. He's a great guy. Really knows his stuff.
Yeah, Clayton, and here's a shout out to him. He's a real jewel of Canva. He's the heartbeat of the business, and he's definitely an ally to every sales leader here.
He's a great guy. Fortunate enough to spend some time with him in New Zealand as well, which is, it was a pleasure. Fun times were had by all. So I love the way you break that down. It sounds like we've actually got a future that we can all look forward to. My question is, if 60% of the sales time is going to be given back, what does that mean? Does that mean that all of us working in sales can take it easy? You know, we can go and maybe spend some more time in the ring or the boxing gym? Or does it mean we're going to have less reps?
It'll probably mean sales will, things will get actually a little bit harder, because each deal will be very, very competitive by highly skilled individuals, right? It might mean that a lot of the people that were able to make it in sales are no longer going to make it in sales. I mean, that's going to be paired with how prepared salespeople are going to be, with how competitive the market currently is. But ultimately, I think that's a good thing. And it will mean that people can truly focus on the strategy of selling and on navigating complex organizations. The people that do that exceptionally well will succeed. The people that don't, they'll be average, or they just will not make money in sales.
So the bar is going to be raised higher.
I think so.
It reminds me of, you know, I was watching like the Rugby World Cup last night, and they were talking about how, you know, like rugby wasn't even professional until like the 90s.
Yeah.
Is sales having that moment where it's technology is allowing us to step up the bar and really professionalize the profession?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it definitely is. There was one of those moments, I think, once when sales became very, you know, once the predictable revenue model that Aaron Ross built,
became like highly specific on whether you were an SDR, an account executive, or an account manager. I think the second moment our engagement platforms came alive because those platforms were able to do student spray and just flooded people's inboxes. That third moment, I think, is definitely coming with AI and specialization on the sales profession as we know it. But again, ultimately, I think the good sales folks win this one. I think the average or mediocre sales folks, which I think the last 10 years, you could probably mask that a little bit, but not already.
Yeah, it's super interesting, isn't it? And also still quite baffling how I saw a research report, I forget what the source was, I think Q1 of this year, percentage of sellers that hit target was just insanely low. Feels like, you know, maybe we are getting a bit carried away with the AI opportunity, but fundamentally, we've got to figure out how to, you know, teach and enable people to sell.
I mean, now we're probably at the kind of a peak on like AI usage. People are probably going to be abusing it for a little bit, and then it'll kind of settle itself, right? What I'm curious about is what is the next flip, right? And we figured out AI, we figured out how to enable sales folks. Very curious in the next 2 years how this affects CRM, how it affects sales engagement platform. Recently, I saw in a LinkedIn video an AI caller, so it would do cold calls with AI. Sounded, I mean, incredibly human. The AI actually just said, "Hey, just so you know, I'm an AI. I'm calling you from this company. I want to tell you about the product." The person responded, kind of acknowledging that it was AI. I said, "Let's talk," and then they just carried on a conversation. I think that is probably the frontier that we're going to see on AI calling versus a sales rep having those initial conversations.
Was it the Tesla one that you saw?
I'm not sure if it was a Tesla one. There was a little bit of a different one. I mean, it was definitely eye-opening. I said, okay, so we had our inbox flooded years back. Now we're going to have our phones flooded with calls. Right. Let's see how that affects sales. But again, I think it's all going to be for the better because the really stand out are going to do really well. We're going to start getting, as you put it, rugby professionals, right? We're going to start getting like the real self professionals.
Yeah, I can't help but think away, like listening to your perspectives there. And I love your visions of the future, by the way. It feels like so much of this points back to humans. You know, the people's, yeah, the individual human beings behind the sell is going to become even more important. That's how we differentiate. That's how we compete. That's how we win.
Yeah. And I think at all layers, right? So at the very beginning layer, so SDR layer, how can the human advantage that we have, how can we use it to close more meetings? At the account executive level, how can we use it to close more deals? At the top, how can we use that human aspect? Like once forecasting is done automatically, once the deals are moving to the CRM automatically, how can the manager best advise their sales reps based on whatever the AI is telling them? So at all the levels, it's gonna change a little bit.
At what point does AI start making the purchasing decisions?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, at what point is it going to be AI talking to AI, right? And just selling and buying? I don't know. There's some companies that are coming up with AI-specific procurement, right? That is an interesting perspective. I don't have a point of view on that yet because I haven't seen that enough. But it does make sense that AI will leverage or that procurement starts leveraging some of the AI aspects to make a call, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I might have to ask my customer over at G2. You think about sort of buyer intent platforms like that, procurement platforms, the data and insight that they have, you know, like how long will it be until someone just puts an LLM on top of that data set and starts advising on purchasing decisions?
Absolutely. Yeah, or AI advises procurement teams. It's like, hey, you know what? I think you can probably squeeze this legal clause out of them, or you can squeeze this much more of a discount out of them. And it'll make sense. And if you and I were to put our procurement ads right now, probably be leveraging AI.
Yeah, no doubt. Boy, I've loved today's conversation. We dived on AI. We've talked about PLG evolution. You've generously shared so many great insights and frameworks from your time working at some amazing companies that you've helped scale. Particular takeaway for me from today's conversation was that two-part framework you shared around identify the stuff that's difficult to do. And the reason that you should do that is because your competitors probably aren't doing it. Figure out what works. And then phase two, figure out how to make it scale. Yeah. Love the way that you think about the future of AI. Love the way that you think about enablement. I know it's something that's really important to the work that you're all doing at Canva.
Thank you, Matt. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. And I guess a final shout out. I mean, Jorge, for those listening to the episode today who would love to reach out to you to continue the conversation on any of these topics we've discussed, what's the best way for people to get in touch?
Yeah, generally, I'm a little bit more active on LinkedIn than any other platform. So there's Jorge Bastard.
Awesome. So we'll link that in the show comments. Jorge, really enjoyed the chat. And when you're back in London, maybe we'll get some tickets to a boxing match soon.
Absolutely.
By uncovering blind spots in performance, motivation, and skills, UHubs helps busy sales leaders at top SaaS companies to optimize their sales enablement so they can develop their reps and grow revenue. The UHubs Pulse platform visualizes each team's development needs, personalized upskilling, and provides data-driven coaching recommendations. These save sales managers 40 plus hours per quarter. and help reps to ramp up 30% faster. Supercharge your sales team by booking a demo today.